making advances to Federal Reserve banks through the Federal Reserve agents as hereinafter set forth and for no other purpose are authorized. The said notes shall be obligations of the United States and shall be receivable by all national and member banks and Federal Reserve banks and for all taxes, customs, and other public dues. They shall be redeemed in lawful money on demand at the Treasury Department of the United States in the city of Washington, District of Columbia, or at any Federal Reserve Bank.
And that, what is our lawful money today?
Well, gee, I'm not sure that
Federal Reserve
wants to admit what that might be.
It's Federal Reserve notes.
No. If a Federal Reserve note was lawful money, why would they offer to redeem a Federal Reserve note in lawful money?
Because when the Federal Reserve law was created in 1913, there was lawful money. There was gold and silver money.
Let me read you the original language then. Section 16, Federal Reserve notes to be issued at the discretion of the Federal Reserve Board for the purpose of making advances to Federal Reserve banks through the Federal Reserve agents, as hereinafter set forth, and for no other purpose are hereby authorized. The said notes shall be obligations of the United States and shall be receivable by all national and member banks and Federal Reserve banks and for all taxes, customs, and other public dues. They shall be redeemed in gold on demand at the Treasury Department of the United States in the city of Washington, District of Columbia, or in gold or lawful money.
Yes, because
at any Federal Reserve Bank.
Yes, but that's 1913. There was gold and silver money. There was certificates of gold and silver money.
That's
you know,
right.
It's changed. They got rid of the national bank notes. They got rid of the gold and silver, right?
In 1934, that's correct.
The only thing left is when you walk into the Federal Reserve Bank and you want to redeem your Federal Reserve notes, they give you other Federal Reserve notes.
That's correct. That's precisely what, what's his name, Byron Dale tried to do at the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank. And he took him to court because they wouldn't make final payment in lawful money.
And what did he want?
He wanted final payment. He wanted lawful money.
No, but what did he want put in his hand?
Whatever the Federal Reserve decided was lawful money. He didn't know.
And what happened?
He got beaten to senseless by federal marshals.
Yeah, you should see the photos of that.
And what happened to his case?
Got thrown out by the judge.
Well,
he got embarrassed. He embarrassed the judge, and the judge could not abide Byron getting the best of him, so he threw the case out.
What year was that?
1970s?
I think it was in the 80s, but I'm not sure. Maybe it was early 90s, late 70s, early 90s, somewhere in there.
And that guy, Gordon,
or late 80s, early 90s.
Gordon Call also. He was near, Dale was near that Gordon Call.
Mm-hmm.
And who was in North Dakota? Anyway, he ran from the same kind of situation was set up for.
Yeah, the only lawful money we have today is our coinage.
So I remember a while back, I didn't read it very carefully, but Mike White was pointing out differences between money and currency per U.S. code, I think he was saying.
Yeah, well, that's pretty. Yeah, he wants to talk about. He wants to try and make Federal Reserve notes become lawful money. He thinks he has a legal way to do that.
Why would we want Federal Reserve notes to be lawful?
Exactly. That's you're baptizing a baby that should have been strangled at birth.
Oh dear! Oh dear! What an image!
That's just my personal opinion. I don't know. So few people understand any angle of it to begin with that trying to get a trying to get any movement at all towards sanity in the money scene is essentially fruitless.
Yeah, especially if you've got all of these the money power in interjecting these phony solutions.
40 seconds left.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's why we have to have alternative means of communication with people who are becoming aware.
Yeah.
To the extent that we can get it, you know, I mean, Beth, I was just listening to that Unite special announcement, and they were talking about they're still progressing in their, tools that they're making available. But anyway.
Well, that was, did you see Joe's email about the...
New Zealand positive money.
Yeah, positive money for the New Zealand people.
So what are they doing? I read that really quick. There was a few comments. I didn't even realize it.
Well, Joe sent around their press release about, in a move signaled by Positive Money UK, we will be changing our emphasis by downplaying reference to sovereign money, where 100% of our money supply is created by our Reserve Bank. Positive Money UK considers calling for the full sovereign money system as regarded as too radical in the central banking community and can often mean the door is closed before the conversation even gets started.
Who cares?
We will therefore be progressing initiatives that help to open a dialogue and shift the conversation in the right direction. The Positive Money UK has pursued this strategy with success and has good communication with the Bank of England as a result. Our goal has not changed. Positive Money New Zealand remains committed to monetary and banking reform that delivers a fairer and more productive economy and society. Yada, 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 yada.
Shall we go on?
And Joe said, there goes another former ally, Kerflop. Can AFJM be far behind?
He loves to kick them.
So Positive Money New Zealand has turned over a new fig leaf, deciding to sidle up to Positive Money UK's form and content because, you know, the central bankers don't like what we're doing here down under. And then there's actually money, as in the PMNZ income thing again. Soon their advisors board will be chock full of lying MMTers. But the income and balance sheets of Positive Money New Zealand will be on the mend.
I wrote back to Joe and I said, well, you know, when you're a monetary reformer and you start to feel that it's hopeless, then you do this. You don't stick around to keep speaking the truth.
Right.
Yep. You know.
And I wrote back and I said, good heavens, Joe, no one wants to risk the anger of the king. We might not be invited to the feast. Best to get your head straight.
Oh, that was funny. And then Howard pops up because Joe was saying is AFJM far behind.
Howard said that?
Howard said yes.
He's
unfortunately,
the president of
the money power figured out long ago how to control the opposition.
Too bad he can't figure that out about climate change and the 17 sustainable goals.
That's why we need Jerry's site, Unite, for privacy.
Yeah,
well, maybe.
But we also need to figure out ways to gather an audience that is willing to learn. And so that's another thing that Sarah G was talking about was, you know, like the social media, like Facebook and, I don't know, those other ones. They all track you and then censor you. And I was only censored once in my comments. But and all they did was say, your comment isn't viewable by anybody else but you. Oh, thank you.
Well, I went back. I went back to the Unite site. You know, Joel uploaded 5 videos.
Yeah.
And I was in there, and I clicked on one of them. You know, and when it shows, when you're on that video page where you can see that they've been uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at those 5 things, each one of those 5 videos has a little square thing that represents the video that's been uploaded, right? And if you look at it in the upper left corner of that little square thing there that says the video, well, on the video it says unprocessed at the bottom. But in the upper left-hand corner of that thing, there's a little white box. So I clicked on it, and it selects it. It puts a check mark in the box. And it pops up a menu. One of the choices is process. So I clicked, process.
Oh, great.
So it chunked away for, I don't know, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, something like that. Finally, it popped up, and it says, ooh, this is now processed. This is a processed video. And so you can see one of the frames of the video.
Hmm.
But I could not figure out how to play it.
Well, Jerry's check has to clear.
I don't know whether, that's if she used a credit card, it's already cleared.
It's cleared.
They wouldn't let you in without that clearing.
That's right. But, Andy, I sent a response to some of our questions from
my group. I saw some of those, yeah.
Okay, and they said, if we wanted, we could ask for, you know.
Special attention. Yeah.
Special attention, yeah.
Yep.
The group could.
Why could we ask for it?
Well, Jerry had a question. Well, what I wanted to say to you, though, Jerry, about this was when you start using the word chat, chat is something else besides video. Chat is that section on the side of the screen.
Oh, that's what
I was wondering. So you're not talking the same language they are.
Right. And that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out. Somebody said, I wrote down the questions, and somebody said conference chat. So that's what
exactly.
I said. But you're right. We're not talking the same language.
Yep.
So that is one of our problems. I guess some other people who have managed to get some of their videos up and playing are familiar with some of these ways.
Videos.
Yeah, right.
Well, you have a learning curve, Jerry. We understand.
Not me. I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, me neither.
You're our leader. You're the one that knows the most about tech.
Throw me an anchor.
We're in trouble. Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know. The only thing I thought of, the thing that crossed my mind, was that maybe it has to be marked as a public resource, whatever, in order for it to be viewable.
Oh, yeah, we've got the channel that it's going on. That's only tests. We've got that private.
Exactly.
That's one thing.
So, and if that's the case, then I'm not sure I'm all that interested in Unite. If we can't evaluate what is up there before I release it to the public viewing, screw it. I need to make sure what I put up there looks the way I want it to look when it goes out.
Well, let's find out before we go off on a tangent about how bad Unite is.
I'm just saying that's part of my requirement.
Right.
That's valid.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think that they do have ways of doing that. But
yeah, and I'm sure it's possible. I just have not found it yet.
Right. Yeah. So.
Why don't we invite their member to our next Unite meeting and have them answer our questions?
Yeah. Well,
bill would be for that.
Ask them if it costs money.
No, it's free. They said that our conference chat was free too. Remember, they said they were going to charge. They said no, it's free.
Yeah.
So
conference chat is free.
Okay, so we have to ask if live stream is for, oh my God, whatever.
This is good to learn. I'm learning too.
Yep.
Yeah, so like when you try to put stuff up on YouTube, they go through the same hoops, and then YouTube can strike them down and just erase immediately without any warning all of your, you know, whatever you've put in there for years of content just is gone.
Yep.
So the Unite doesn't do that yet.
Not that we know of.
No, they were started.
We have to read their agreement with us. We have to actually read it. Really?
Okay, you read it and let us know.
Okay. Yep. Ask them for it. Let's ask them for it when they come to our meeting.
Well, it's got to be up there. End user license agreement. EULA. That's what it's called.
Okay.
EULA.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Can we keep reading, Peek?
Yeah, we can't. We shouldn't make any of the Unite decisions. No Unite decisions without our whole team. So back to Peek.
Number two. The second period from July 1st, 1914 to the end of 1922 covers 8.5 years and was abnormal. We sold the world goods, mostly foodstuffs and raw materials, to the amount of $46,952,000,000. And in spite of most of the world being at war, we bought from it goods to the amount of $25,766,000,000. Leaving the world in debt to us for goods in the sum of $21,186,000,000.
I wonder what goods we bought from them.
You'll have to look at the charts. Joe sent me a link to a treasurer's report that's listed at Fraser. Do you know Fraser? Federal Reserve Economic Resource Database?
Yeah.
That's at the St. Louis Federal Reserve. There was an article in there. Oh, it was a whole PDF paper. It's like 518 pages. But it is the report of the Secretary of the Treasury from 1940. And it goes back to, I think, 1913.
Oh, okay, good.
It's like I said, it's 518 pages or 580 pages. I don't remember.
But it's interesting, you know, I'm curious about what goods we came from them. Yeah,
but it is the report of the Secretary of Treasury.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it's like one of those pieces of statistical information that Wilkin probably used.
Okay.
Although he worked before 1940, but those same type of reports have been going on since the Secretary of Treasury was the Secretary of the Treasury, which is 1792.
Right.
But that was one of the very first cabinet positions, that and the Secretary of State and the Attorney General.
Okay, keep reading, Randy.
Okay, our tourist expenditures, immigrant remittances, and the like amounted to only $3.5 billion. The world further went into our debt for a great new item of interest, dividends, and principal payments upon the monies owing to us both as a nation and as individuals. And these debt services, together with shipping and other services, increased the world's debt to us by $8.532 billion. Our debt was offset by services rendered to us by foreigners, by payments made on account of debt interest and principal, and by the shipping of gold to us in the sum of $1.746 billion, making a total offset of $6.913 billion.
Oh, to us, right?
Yes.
Okay.
At the end, we had a net increase in the world's debt to us in the sum of $19.305 billion. Our government took obligations of foreign governments in the sum of $10.304 million. These are our war loans. In the payment of their debts, foreigners sent back to us securities they had previously purchased from us in the sum of $2.222 billion. As private citizens, we made investments abroad in the sum of $6.779 billion. Public finance accounts for only somewhat more than half of the total of the financial transactions.
That's because J.P. Morgan Chase and the financiers were making money off of this war.
Yeah. Our citizens sold abroad a vast quantity of goods at very high prices because the world was hungry for our goods. And our people did not have the national bookkeeping facilities to know that the nation was not getting paid for what it sold.
But those financiers knew they were getting us into debt.
The third period covers the years from the beginning of 1923 through 1929. We entered the period owing practically nothing to foreign nations and being owed a great deal by them. We sold goods in the amount of $33.711 billion, which was more than we had sold during the 18 years of the pre-war period. But we also bought more from the world than we had ever bought. Goods to the amount of $28.735 billion, leaving the world in debt to us on account of goods in the sum of $4.976 billion. During the 18 years of the pre-war period, it will be remembered, our immigrants sent abroad nearly $6 billion.
Could I stop you there? I have a question.
Yeah.
So this period, 1923 to 29, when he says we also bought more from the world than we had ever bought, what were we buying? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. No, we have to look at the...
Okay, Treasury report.
Records, yeah. Treasury report records. Or commerce, one or the other. Because commerce, I'm sure, kept the tariff records.
Right.
That's part of Department of Commerce.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, let's see. During the 18 years of the pre-war period, remembered, our immigrants sent abroad nearly $6 billion. But during these 7 years, 1923-29, our tourists and immigrants spent or sent abroad the sum of $7.021 billion, leaving us in the hole on current transactions in the sum of $2.045 billion. This, however, was offset by the sum of $10.677 billion due to us for service on our loans and for other services against which was a countercharge by the foreigners for services rendered to us and for interest and the like owing to them, amounting to $5.875 billion. They also shipped us gold in the net amount of $175 million. The result was a net increase in debt to us for the period of $2.572 billion.
Uh-huh.
Had we conducted our foreign affairs on the simple bookkeeping system, we should have known that we were selling goods for which we were unlikely ever to receive payment. But our bankers in this period floated loans and sold them to the American people in the net amount of $7.140 billion.
But the bankers knew what they were doing. He presented
all the interest. All the interest paid to us on war and private loans came out of our new lendings. The foreigners took the exchange provided by the loans and proceeded to buy our securities and build up demand bank deposits in the sum of $4.568 billion. That is, we bought foreign long-term securities. And the foreigners turned around and bought our securities, mostly short-term and highly liquid, thus creating for themselves a position of financial power and mobility that eventually contributed greatly to the wrecking of our banking system.
But this was a plan by our bankers.
Yes. Well, he says the wrecking of our banking system. He's talking about real banking. You know, banking for people.
Well, isn't he talking
Which about... was wrecked. It was wrecked so that the central bankers could take over.
Right. I assume that by wrecking the banking system, he's talking about the 1930 to 33 debacle of the banks.
Well, no, he's talking about the 23 to 29. That's the period he's talking about now.
Well, that's where it was set up. With the but the result was,
you know, 1929. The fourth period of 4 years from 1930 through 1933 shows the collapse of our house of cards. We sold goods to the amount of $9.554 billion, took goods to the amount of $7.923 billion, leaving us creditors on the goods account in the sum of $1.631 billion. The figures are not...
Could you do me a favor? Could you just read those two sentences slowly? Because
we sold goods to the amount of $9.554 billion and took goods, in other words, bought goods, to the amount of $7.923 billion, leaving us creditors on the goods account in the sum of $1.631 billion. In other words, subtract 7.923 from 9.554, and you get 1.631.
Now, what was the period that Wilkin and his people said we imported more than we exported?
Well, what he was talking about was the 1930 through 1941.
Okay. Okay.
What he was talking about was that we imported essentially five entire crops of wheat.
Right.
It wasn't a lot, comparatively speaking, but it was just enough to wreck our price structure.
Well, what I came away from his example was, meanwhile, during the 30s, we're being told our farmers are overproducing.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was a lie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lie on two grounds. One of which was that we were actually producing, domestically, producing less than we had in the pre-Depression years. So our production was somewhat down, not significantly, but it was below what we had produced in 1928. Taking 1933 as an example. We produced less in 1933 than we did in 1928.
Well, we also had less money.
But we also imported the same stuff we had produced less of, and called that excess surplus product hanging around too.
What we imported was called surplus?
Well, yeah.
Because you had the Dust Bowl too during
that. If it's hanging around, yeah. Well, in other words, there may have been good reason for importing some. We did have more people in 33 than we did in 28. And because our production was down some, you know, we can either substitute with other crops, similar crops, or we can buy some on the world market.
Were there people during those years that died of starvation in this country?
Yes.
Oh, boy. I'm worried about that in New York City.
It's happening even today.
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
Let's try not to think too much about that.
Well, I don't know. I think that is the right thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
It is harrowing. Yes, it's frightening. Yes, it's depressing. Yep, all of those things. You betcha. The figures are not as small in volume of goods as they are in dollars, for world prices of raw commodities dropped vertically. Our tourists and immigrants at once wiped out our creditor position on goods by sending abroad $2.828 billion, leaving us debtors in the amount of $1.197 billion.
I guess payments they were trying to save their relatives back home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. Payments to us on account of interest and services offset by our payments of similar character brought us out as creditors on the whole account of the period to the amount of $1.768 billion. We managed to get back from abroad investments in the amount of only half a billion, while the foreigners during the same time were taking back from us their investments in the amount of $2.289 billion. Thus, during a period of general default upon the foreign obligations held by us, you get that? Default upon the foreign obligations held by us. The folks who thought they were going to pay us money, investments we held that were promised to be paid by them, went into default.
Well, because we weren't supplying them with loans to buy our investments.
Well, that doesn't have anything to do with their promise to pay. It just means that the bankers set them up for a fall, just like they set us up for a fall.
Right.
Thus, during a period of general default upon the foreign obligations held by us, the foreigners managed to take back more than $2 billion of the investments which they had made here with funds borrowed from us.
And that's all those different, throughout the 1920s, all those different banker international committees, yep, trying to figure out how to get Europe to pay debts they owed us.
That's right, them spendthrifts. Bringing all the figures together, we find that in 38 years, we sold to the world goods in the amount of $121.25 billion and bought from the world goods in the amount of $84.604 billion. The difference between what we sold in goods and what we took in goods is thus $36.646 billion. This represents the amount of American materials and labor which has not been exchanged for foreign materials and labor. Our immigrants sending home funds to their relatives, and our tourists spending money for passage on foreign-owned steamships and in foreign countries, canceled payment in goods to the extent of $19.429 billion. No other nation in the world would have allowed such a drain.
What does it mean? Canceled payment in goods. What does he mean by that?
They offset.
Offset. Okay.
Yeah. It canceled out certain payments. Yeah. It's just by setting the numbers and doing the subtraction, that's cancellation. Yeah.
Okay.
No other nation in the world relies on such a drain. Some nations have been so adversely affected by the effect of tourist expenditures upon their balance of payments that they have been obliged to subject them to the most rigid restrictions. In some instances, they have even treated them as a specific object of barter transactions. I know of one agreement between two foreign countries whereby one of them traded tourists' revenues with another for carloads of hogs. The basis was about $40 per head for hogs and $60 per head for tourists.
Very good. Very good.
This is perhaps an extreme example, but it illustrates somewhat graphically the reality of the effect of tourist expenditures upon national economy. The foreigners also paid us gold on account in the net sum of $2.095 billion. There were on each side of the account charges for freight, insurance, and other items incident to shipping, and for interest and dividends, so that at the end of the period, and for the transactions of the period, we found ourselves being owed the sum of $22.645 billion. That is, we found ourselves unpaid for nearly one-sixth of all that we had sold. That is the net amount.
And that's after 38 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
The actual account stands thus. Foreign securities investments, foreign war loans, foreign investments here, net $22.645. Our so-called investments fall into three classes. Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
We got 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, let's stop there.
Yeah, let's stop there. I've been doing my homework, like I said, so I understand this a little better now.
Well, also, now throw on top of all that stuff that you think you've come to understand, the fact that there's still, even at that time, all of that slushing back and forth of the numbers, it was still all IOUs. Every once in a while, maybe. somebody would ship some gold.
Yeah, well, he mentions that, right?
The gold. Yeah. But generally, no. If I owe you some gold, we'll just write it down, make a note of it, okay? And maybe next year. Well, if you don't have real need for it, why, I'll just hang on to it. I know it's yours. It'll just sit here. There's no reason for me to put it on a ship and send it over there. Why? It might sink. So I'll just make a note of it here. And, you know, in good banker parlance, why, that's the way things go.
The gold is really just a formality. It's
correct.
Meaningless.
Yes. Always has been.
Yeah.
But it does represent, and can, and did for a long time, represent a common, commonly acceptable stand-in for value.
Well, also, it was what Paul Warburg said in like around 1916. He said, we got to get the gold out of the hands of the people.
You betcha.
We got to get it back into the Federal Reserve banks.
Yeah, Fort Knox for sure, yeah.
Yeah. We don't want them to have any. I'm saying that, you know, they don't can't make them independent of us.
No, certainly not. Well, and the same, as far as I'm concerned, same goes for guns these days. You know, the population that gives up its guns has sold itself into bondage, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because guns are there in order to protect the individuals from their government.
Right.
That's right.
That was the whole point of that thing. And it's, you know, I fail to understand why nobody asks the question that this latest shooting with the woman that shot her way through the door and all that stuff and killed the three kids and the three teachers, or the teacher, the superintendent, or the principal, whatever it was, and you know, that one.
Did he really do that, or is this a media mock-up?
That happened. No, my point was that I have yet to hear anybody offer a law that would have prevented that situation.
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, there isn't a law. What that requires is a community to know what's going on in their community, to know that this person is on the ragged edge.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But we never go there.
Yep.
We always go to, you know, oh, more gun restriction.
Exactly.
That was the whole point of the media blitz, I think.
Yep.
They don't go into who this person was or, you know,
how,
what drugs he, she was on.
Well, that's understandable to me. Nobody wants to have their life tore apart, particularly the family of the person who did the thing. That's pretty rough. So, yeah, they should be able to keep their privacy. But, my God, they at least should have some sort of community support mechanism. But that's what's disappeared. Communities have dissolved.
Right.
Guys, we have less than 1 minute.
Yep. This,
And
next week, I may not be here next week, so I'm.
Uh oh.
I'm gonna go up to my sister's for Easter Sunday. So.
Oh
well,
yes.
Let us know, because I don't think we should.
I won't
do it without you.
I won't be here next week. Next Sunday, I'm gonna be at my sister's place.
What about Saturday?
What about Saturday?
Are you home on Saturday?
Usually.
So maybe we can find a time during the
okay.
week. Okay. What do you say, Gary?
Okay.
Okay.
Let's negotiate.
Thank you. I feel like I'm starting to learn this.